Yeah, brilliant stuff there. Thanks very much to Niamh and Kaya for that. And you might have heard one brave man there in the middle saying he's going to try and give up smoking. Notoriously hard to give up, but it is the subject of my next piece this afternoon, because Ash Wednesday is also the annual National No Smoking Day, and University Hospital Kerry is marking the day as a smoke-free and vape-free zone. So this comprises all UHK sites, reflecting the hospital's ongoing journey towards being tobacco and e-cigarette free. And to mark this, I spoke earlier on with Dr. Liam Chalk, respiratory consultant at University Hospital Kerry, and I first asked him what the medical effects are of smoking.
So I suppose in my practice as a respiratory consultant, the majority of patients that I see in my clinic with smoking related lung conditions, and the most common one that I see is chronic obstructive pulmonary disease. And so it's a disease that affects the airways and the air sacs where your gas exchange takes place. So it causes a lot of inflammation there, destruction of those gas sacs, and then I suppose people present with the a plethora of respiratory symptoms like cough, shortness of breath, and the cough can be dry or productive. They may get intermittent wheeze, intermittent infections that can be either treated at home or they may require coming to hospital. That's kind of the main symptoms that we see associated with chronic obstructive pulmonary disease. In terms of the treatment of that, I suppose once we've diagnosed it with formal pulmonary function testing, we institute inhaled therapy. But as long as the person continues to smoke, which I do see a lot of, the underlying diagnosis of chronic obstructive pulmonary disease continues to progress, so they become more short of breath, the coughing becomes a bit worse, coughing up more phlegm, infections become much more frequent, their hospitalizations could become more frequent, or they start having hospitalizations. And then I suppose as the disease progresses, these people will ultimately need oxygen therapy, whether they need it when they're walking, whether they need it all the time, whether they're walking or not. So they form the most common type of referral that I get into a respiratory clinic. The second type of presentation that I see are people with lung cancer, and either smokers or ex-smokers. So the majority of people that I see with lung cancers are smokers, but not all people who get lung cancer are smokers.
Is it maybe a bit of a misconception that people think, you know, if they only smoke for a few years, or if they, you know, only smoke maybe when they're drinking or don't smoke that often, that perhaps they're at much less risk of developing either any conditions associated with it or lung cancer eventually?
I suppose as long as the smoking risk is there, whether it's direct smoking by the person themselves or passive smoking, there's always a risk of, I suppose, the adverse events to the respiratory tract in terms of, I suppose, developing COPD or lung cancer or any other type of organ dysfunction related to smoking. I suppose it's difficult to determine or quantify the exact amount to which this takes place, but there's certainly a dose risk correlation that as long as you smoke, you increase your risk of adverse respiratory health, cardiovascular health, cerebrovascular health, increasing your risk of cancer, not just of the lung, of the food pipe, the kidneys, the liver, the mouth, tongue, pancreas, voice box, etc. And so that risk is always there. And it doesn't fully eliminate once you stop smoking. It can take many years to overall reduce your risk of cancer in relation to those conditions.
And what are, maybe, I know this is might be a bit of a general question, but if you can think of any examples, what are some of the day-to-day lives like of people who are significantly affected by COPD or by lung cancer? Liam.
Yeah, so I suppose people with COPD generally, they may wake up during the night short of breath, and they end up coughing a lot during the night. When they wake up in the morning, especially those who smoke, they often reach for their first cigarette in the morning. It's one that they can't do without. And then with that, they're coughing up lots of phlegm in the morning. I suppose in more advanced disease, they may become more breathless as they're trying to get dressed or just trying to carry out basic activities of daily living. So dressing themselves, toileting, walking up or downstairs in their own house, doing basic chores around the house, gardening, cleaning, etc. I suppose become more limited with regard to that. People that are on oxygen tend to be more housebound, even though giving them oxygen is meant to make them more independent, but they tend to stay indoors because of the optics of wearing oxygen, so they become more sedentary. Because reducing their overall physical and respiratory fitness by doing so. I suppose those in terms of lung cancer, I suppose also before they're diagnosed, they'll have a plethora of symptoms like weight loss, cough, chest pain, maybe coughing up some blood. And I suppose when they're eventually diagnosed, depending on the staging of which they're diagnosed, I will either commit them to a surgical procedure to remove it fully, or they require chemotherapy or radiotherapy or a combination of both, which in the County of Kerry, if they require that, in terms of radiotherapy, will have to travel daily to Cork for that. So I suppose the adverse effects of smoking and the underlying lung conditions that they get will severely impact your quality of life, in particular in relation to COPD and cancer.
And I know a big part of the initiative in UHK at the moment is to move from to a tobacco-free campus and a vape-free campus as well. I know you mentioned the risk of secondhand inhalation as well. I suppose that's an important point to nail down, because just because maybe you give up smoking, if you're around people who are smoking a lot, you do also have an increased risk.
Yeah, certainly. So I suppose I see a few people in my clinic where they live with someone who smokes in the house. I suppose people are becoming more savvy now with smoking education, that they would smoke outside the house. But there are still cohorts of people that come to my clinic who have a diagnosis of COPD by virtue of the fact that they've been exposed to passive smoking over 10, 15, 20, 30 years. So I suppose that's an important point to reiterate, that it's not just all smokers who get COPD. It can be those who are exposed to passive smoking long term.
And is age a factor in this, Liam, at all?
So I suppose with chronic obstructive pulmonary disease, the main risk factor is smoking. We do see COPD in a younger population. I suppose we now have more evidence to say that those with a low birth term weight, a history of childhood infections, those exposed to biomass fuel or fires at a younger age, I suppose those with a rare genetic condition called alpha-1 antitrypsin deficiency, where it puts the patient or the person at increased risk of developing a COPD at an earlier age, and even more so when they're smokers. But it's something that if someone came to my clinic at a younger age diagnosed with emphysema or COPD, it's certainly an enzyme that I would be checking on that person.
Yeah, and I want to touch on vaping as well, speaking of younger people, because it's a huge phenomenon, and not just among people who are giving up smoking. I mean, it is anecdotal evidence, but there's huge anecdotal evidence of people who have never smoked cigarettes or smoked tobacco who are starting off with vapes. Is that something that you see as a respiratory consultant, or is it a bit too new for that yet?
No, it's something that I see regularly. So I suppose in Clinton, there's one patients that come to my clinic who quit smoking but have substituted it with vaping. So that's like the only way we have of eliminating smoking in terms of therapy we can offer is nicotine replacement therapy. That's evidence-based to help people quit smoking. And certainly vaping isn't a way of doing that. They tend to substitute cigarettes for vaping and continue vaping long-term as opposed to quitting it. The second cohort of patients that I see, because I'm an adult respiratory physician, I only see adults or adolescents over the age of 16 years of age. So I see young people coming to my clinic now, I suppose with no chronic lung disease or somewhat asthma, but who start vaping when they start secondary school because it's fashionable, it's flavoursome, I suppose it's the cool thing to do at the time. So I suppose vaping or e-cigarette and vaping associated lung injury is not an insignificant lung disease. I see patients coming into hospital with that, and there's very little evidence-based treatment for that. It's mainly supportive treatment in that if their oxygen levels in the blood are low, we supplement it with oxygenation through the nose. And very little evidence in terms of antibiotics or steroids working to treat that. It's just time and letting the inflammation from the lungs settle down. But I certainly see a majority of young people coming to my clinic that are vaping intermittently or long-term, who have never smoked previously. They just go straight to vaping.
And is that a big problem, Liam? I mean, I suppose, is that just from them vaping too much, or is it, a particular product within a vape that's making it dangerous? What exactly is causing that damage?
So there's two, I suppose, types of vapes that I understand people can buy. There's cannabinoid or nicotine. That's the vitamin E acetate in the vape that, I suppose, induces the lung injury. I suppose the majority of the kids that I see don't have a chronic lung disease. I see the odd few that have asthma that can make their symptoms worse. But other than that, I suppose it's the long-term effect of vaping we don't know yet. I suppose if you think back to the 1950s and 60s when people were smoking, we didn't realize the long-term effects of smoking back then. We do now. I recommend it be the same scenario in 10, 15, 20 years' time. We'll have more data, I suppose longitudinal data, into the harmful effects of vaping long-term.
Yeah, and I don't want to, you know, paint this as a, if you smoked one cigarette, your life is finished. I mean, I suppose, Liam, you presumably, if people enter treatment and they take the right steps and they give up smoking when they're clearly presenting with problems, I presume there is a way back for people's health as well.
Well, totally. So I suppose, you know, when you give up smoking, I suppose in particular those that have a chronic lung disease like COPD, you're your breathlessness improves, your coughing improves, the amount of phlegm that you produce improves, your risk of infection improves. Those with asthma, their risk of infection also improves. I suppose within the first 24 hours of quitting smoking, your nicotine levels in the blood start to drop. After a few days, your carbon monoxide levels start to drop. Over the next couple of months, your coughing and shortness of breath improves, your risk of heart disease drops, coronary artery disease risk drops, your risk of cancer drops over 5 to 10 years. So there are significant health benefits to quitting smoking that people should be aware of, and it's never too late to quit.
Yeah, is there one message, Liam, that you would give to people who are listening in, who might be thinking, all right, maybe I can give this a go, maybe I should give this a go, so that they avoid ending up in your clinic?
Yeah, so I suppose with smoking, I suppose it's an addiction, or nicotine is addiction like everything else, and people need support to quit. I suppose you have to be 100% fully committed to quitting, like, whenever the time is right for you. So availing of the services that are there, such as nicotine replacement therapy through your GP or coming to my clinic, are the smoking cessation officers that are available to the HSE, and people can be referred in from their GP, or when they come to my clinic, if someone is smoking or vaping, I will offer them a referral to a smoking cessation officer. So there are multiple ways that we can help support the person in terms of quitting smoking. It's never too late to quit in terms of the benefits from quitting smoking.
Excellent. Brilliant stuff, Liam. Thanks so much for joining me and explaining that for us.
No problem at all. Thank you.